Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to call this meeting of the House Transportation Finance Committee special meeting to order. Welcome, everyone. We're glad to have you here. As you already know, this meeting is focused on the MNLAR system that was rolled out as of July 24th. We are now to September 11th, and things still seem to be causing some issues for both constituents and folks that work for the department and folks that work in deputy registrar's offices. Just to lay out a little background information for everyone, I think it's information everyone knows, but I think it bears reviewing. We've been working, the state of Minnesota has been working on the MNLAR system for over 8 years. We've spent over $90 million to try and get a system to replace a 30-year-old computer program that obviously probably needed to be replaced. Technology changes, and we want to have the best and most up-to-date technology in place that we possibly can have. So we've been working on this. We had a number of hearings through the session to review the progress of MNLARs, and thought from what was told to us during those hearings that things were moving along at a pretty good clip and that we could stand up the system this summer and expect reasonable results. There's some indication, lots of indications, frankly, that things are still not up and running as they should be. This is very challenging. Frankly, ladies and gentlemen, this does not reflect well on any of us. Those of us that are elected officials and those of us that work for the state of Minnesota need to do better. And I apologize personally to the citizens in the state of Minnesota and to the people that work with these systems because I do personally take some of the blame here. We should have dug deeper into this before we allowed it to be rolled out. I'm no computer programmer or IT specialist, but it's very disappointing that this is not working better. And we are here today to try and move things forward. I believe that we are committed to this system, that turning back the clock to the old system is not possible or practical, but that we should move forward with this system and get it up and running. I will say on the brighter side that things are better than they were at the point of rollout. Some things are working and working pretty well. So that's good news and gives me some encouragement and hope that we will move forward in a positive direction. But we've got to get there, and we've got to get there in a way that we treat each other with respect. The last thing I want to hear is that anybody involved in this is treating other people with disrespect. This is difficult work, and we need to all work together to move this forward. I'd like to give my colleague, Dave Baker, a chance to address the issue because it was his subcommittee that set up the website that has collected a number of comments and complaints from a variety of people. And so I will turn it over to Representative Baker at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to also say thanks to our colleagues for coming in today. We appreciate this, and we sort of are looking for your advice and direction because we have a challenge ahead of us to get this huge, massive IT system out there that people can start looking at and trusting again. I think we all had agreed when the MNLAR system was funded many years ago, with a lot of dollars put aside to it, that we knew the old system wasn't working very well. But I will tell you, most people right now would love to go back to that right now. And that is an embarrassment for us as legislators that appropriated a lot of our taxpayer dollars to do this. So we need to help these folks get it working right. Because I don't think anybody's suggesting we're going to go back. The new system has to work. And as Chair Torkelson had said, the Speaker put together a subcommittee of government technology and responsiveness that has yet to have a summer fall meeting yet. We're planning on those coming up soon. But this Midlars actually has taken up a lot of my time and meetings and such with stakeholders, deputy registers around the state, with the commissioners, with their IT teams. And we have, so far, now this, our system was launched, our website was launched for people to give feedback on. We so far have about 240 or so responses to people that have said 98% of them have a lot of frustrations. A lot of them are, hey, we like the system better, it worked well for me, because we are hearing both. But I will tell you, though, it's a huge majority of them are very, very frustrated with wait lines that are unacceptable. They cannot get their license plates transferred. They can't get their tabs on their new cars they bought. And dealers are having one heck of a hard time trying to sell cars. We've got deputy registrars that are actually telling customers, we can't help you anymore. You have to go find somewhere else to go because they can't turn away more people because the backlog is getting so bad. But we want to be here to help. I also want to thank the commissioner from DPS, Commissioner Dolman, Commissioner Baden, who have been actually working very hard on this alongside of me. I want to thank Representative Nash for his work on this, and he's an IT guy. He knows this as well as anybody, and we didn't expect this to be a perfect rollout. I don't think you ever can in this kind of a system because it's so large. So we're just entering our eighth week, and I sure hope today we'll see some good bright spots that have been seen most recently. I got another six or eight comments this morning from folks around the state of Minnesota that are very worried about this system. So there's a lot of problems we want to work through. We do want to fix it. We're here to try to find some solutions, hopefully, today. But we do need to find out why we got to this place today. And with that, Mr. Chair, I guess I'll turn it over and we'll hear from our testifiers and take it from there. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Just to give you a little idea of the format today, we're going to have the department up first to give us their perspective on this with a presentation that should last around 15 minutes. And then we'll hear from the legislative auditor, who has also been taking a look at this issue. And then we have a list of testifiers on the agenda. If there are others who would wish to testify, Erica's back there. She will raise your hand, Erica. Erica will be happy to take your name and get it up to us here at the front. So we will move ahead. Commissioner, if you would care to make your opening remarks, we're welcome to the Transportation Finance Committee today.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Thank you, and Representative Baker and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mona Dolman. I'm the Commissioner of Public Safety. Thank you for the opportunity for DPS and Minute Services to provide a report on the status of MNLARS, the Minnesota Licensing and Registration System. I'd like to thank you for your support, Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, and members. And I'd like to acknowledge that I respect the fact that you have had many questions for us, and you continue to push us to find solutions and resolve outstanding issues that our citizens and the deputy registrars are experiencing. As you know, and as you said, Mr. Chair, we launched the motor vehicle side of the new system on July 24th. We have moved from a 30-year-old antiquated system to the future of what technology can give us. System rollouts of this magnitude undoubtedly present capacity and performance challenges in early days, and we fully acknowledge such challenges in the case of MNLARS. While diligent work went into the preparations for launch and testing of the system, issues emerged at rollout, and we have taken immediate action and continue to take immediate action to fix processes, adjust capacity, and make system changes where they're needed. We continue to be responsive to our business partners and are working to enhance those responsive actions where we can, and that is to the deputy registrars and ultimately to the citizens of the state of Minnesota. You will hear more detail today from Director Don Olson and CIO Paul Meekin, but I wanted to share at a very high level that the agile system, or the agile approach that we employed to develop this system, means functionality will continue to be released in stages. And the feedback of system users throughout this process will be critical to driving the prioritization of improvements and enhancements. You have my commitment that we will continue to do all that we can do to listen to and be responsive to our partners in this process, namely the deputy registrars. I believe that together we will be successful as we move forward. This is a once-in-a-generation redesign of not only the IT system, but also the business processes underlying driver and vehicle service operations. Commissioner Baden could not be here today, but offered this comment. This system is allowing us to transition into a modern, far more nimble system that will allow for additional innovation in the future. Harnessing the power of cloud technology, we will have the ability to scale more quickly to make changes and enhancements to the system and support driver and vehicle services moving forward. Technology and business changes of this magnitude are inherently disruptive. We are optimistic about what this system can do for Minnesotans, and we understand that there is complexity and many different layers in almost every transaction that takes place. We greatly appreciate the feedback and patience of system users and stakeholders as we identify and resolve issues building out additional functionality. The status report that Director Olson and CIO Meekin have prepared will show the progress that we've made. They'll talk about how we have enhanced our communication with our critical business partners, the deputy registrars. They'll talk about the benefits to the people of Minnesota that the system is bringing, and they will talk about lessons learned and how those will be critical to the rollout of the driver side of the system in 2018. Again, I thank you for the opportunity to be here today, and I look forward to continuing our work together. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Just additional information for folks. I'm going to try and move through the presentations and take questions at the end of the end of our time today rather than taking questions during the process. The Commissioner will be back at the end of after we've heard from other folks to answer our questions at that time. So thank you, Commissioner, and we'll see you at the end of our meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next up, we have Don Olson from the department and Paul Meekin from Minute. Please introduce yourselves for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
For the record, my name is Don Olson. I'm the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services at the Department of Public Safety.
And my name is Paul Meekin. I'm the Chief Business Technology Officer working for Minute, partnering with the Department of Public Safety.
Good afternoon. We're pleased to be here today to give you an update on the progress NMARS has made and the current state of NMARS as it exists today.
Hello. MNLARS really is a once-in-a-generation upgrade, moving us into the 21st century. It does replace a 30-year-old mainframe, as you've heard discussed here already. The old system just really was not sustainable. I think most people are aware of the business case for building this new system as far as flexibility, security, and overall ability to expand functionality. It just could not be there anymore. So we did need, just revisiting our business case, we did need to build a new system on modern technologies to take us into the future and to be able to provide more functionality, more security, and other modern type amenities of computer systems to support the business processes for the state. So MNLARS does do that. What we have put in here on July 24th is the foundation for that vision moving forward. At the very core, it provides a real-time updating mechanism, which is valuable both for Minnesotans when they have their experience, say, at the counter, they can know exactly the state of their record, and also for law enforcement, who when a transaction happens at that counter, at that point of contact at the deputy registrar's office, the law enforcement record is updated in real-time also. And this, to do this, of course, required a new system, but also new underlying technologies to support that. So MNLARS is working. It is not working perfectly, as we've heard discussed here. But the system is up to the task. We currently, since going live, have processed about 828,000 registration renewals and about 240,000 title transactions, which is very much on par with the level of transactions that we've supported in prior years. To give an example of that, we can look at August over August comparisons between 2016 and 2017. You can see that for registration renewals, we're a little bit off pace. But for title transactions, we're a little bit above. We're a little above pace on registration and a little just below pace on title transactions. But overall, our transaction count is higher than last year. It is a little bit difficult with the nature of motor vehicle transactions to compare exactly month over month, year to year, but it does show you a trend, and more importantly, with this 26% increase, it shows you that the MIMAR system is built on a sound architecture and is up to the task. Also with MIMARs, we took great care in our design and our architecture to make sure that it would be an available system. To date, the system has been online about 99.93% of the time. We have had two slowdown periods, which have affected users, of course, and we've also taken one outage for a few hours, which had everyone off the system. So the system, by design, did not have all functionality at launch, and the reason for this is, of course, that the list of functionality desired in the system is nearly endless. And to ship a system following modern development practices, you have to pick a point and you have to pick the features which you're going to have in your first release. And then following these modern development practices, you continue ongoing, really indefinitely, rolling out new features. And that is very different than the world we've lived under to date, whereby a system is delivered and then changes occur during a significant event, like a new statute or a new business process or something like that. In this case, we continually are working to enhance the system, to improve its performance, to make it more secure, and to add functionality. We do have a roadmap, which I believe you'll have a handout of, and it looks something like this. And you can see in here, just targeting forward, what our intentions are in the pipeline to continue to improve this system. So in the top part of each of these, we do this seasonally here, and then of course as we get into that season, we get more focused as to when we actually develop and test these things and then pick the date to roll them out. Generally, we roll out on about 10-week cycles, but it still matches pretty closely to the four seasons of the year. You can get an idea here, say, of the things that we're looking at doing in the coming months. For example, throughout this fall here, we're looking at more functionality around inventory, more functionality around refunds and base values, improvements for law enforcement, improvements for IRP IFTA. And then we get down to our system improvements area, and this includes not just functionality or not just fixes for issues or glitches in the system, but for enhancing it, scaling it up, stabilizing it, putting security patches on, things like that. So the important thing with this is, although we are very much focused today talking about motor vehicle, the really important thing is that MIMARS is both motor vehicle and driver services. And when you look all the way over to the right and you see that driver's license and real ID out there, everything that we have going on right now is a balance between what we're doing with motor vehicle to keep that going and to improve that, and our ongoing activity to deliver real ID by statute next October.
So addressing issues as quickly as possible. With the help of the deputy registrars, we've been able to identify issues involving certain transactions quickly, and we started working on that the day it was launched, either to make a fix into the system, to provide additional training, or to determine do we need to have a workaround for this. We fully expected that there would be issues. Just as there is with any new system launch, and a system this size, this large, is definitely going to generate some of those issues. However, when those issues come in, are brought in, we put them through what we call is a triage process. And here's a diagram of how that process works. It's not an immediate that we can start working on things right away. We take in issues or questions from all variety of constituent groups, from constituents, from government entities, from deputy registrars. We need to analyze what's going on. We need to be able to replicate the same kind of information And then we need to prioritize this information. We need to find out how impactful is this, how many people are being affected, what is the nature of this defect or issue that we're getting. Generally, we turn these things around in about a day. Then those issues are brought forward and they're assigned to a developer team, and the developer team works on this. When we launched MNLARS, we were working on these fixes every day, which kept us going at a very rapid pace, obviously, and we were making adjustments on a daily basis. We're now to a point where we can do these fixes more on a weekly basis. It gives us more confidence and more ability to test things through, so we do this on a weekly basis. And now coming up, the next piece that will be launched will be on September 23rd, which is what we would consider an enhancement. These are scheduled pieces of functionality that were intended to go after the launch, and we'll be providing that information out that will have several of the planned for functionality as well as any remaining fixes that needed to be done. We have addressed issues as quickly as possible. These are some examples of the things that we heard initially from the deputy registrars that we worked on. Pending carts was built into the new system as a financial piece to the transactions. We worked to make adjustments to those. Processing and transferring of funds, which is the process of sweeping money out of the deputy accounts and getting that into the state system. Farm registration, there were some fixes that needed to be done based on the time of year that we were working, as well as issues with out-of-state plates. When a customer would come in from out-of-state and want to re-register their vehicle in Minnesota, there were some glitches that went along with that. These are just some of the examples of some of the more high-profile things that you may have heard about in those first few weeks of MNLARS. There are many other fixes that we put in since then. Again, these are just a small example of the fixes that we did. If we didn't have an example or a fix that we could do, we certainly worked with the deputies to determine a workaround that could be used. We identify and prioritize issues every day. As a result, this list of priorities changes on a daily basis. And as Paul has mentioned, this is what we are working on right now. To be able to give inventory reports to the deputy registrars so they can track and monitor their inventory. Improving base value. We had some issues with the calculation of base value early on. We recognized that. We gave some workarounds, but we need to do a little bit more work on improving the base value calculation. Prorate registration, which is dealing with our trucking industry, as well as improving law enforcement's ability to search for the information in the MNLARS system. We are working to support the deputy registrars. We are listening to their concerns and appreciate the issues and the attention that they have brought forward. And as I said earlier, those are the kind of things that drive our priorities and where we're at and how we get these fixes into the system. We've done several different types of activities to support the deputy registrars. We've made some on-site visits to get a better understanding of how they are using the system so we can get a feel or an understanding for the flavor of how they do their business. Early on, to be able to get communication out to offices as quickly as possible, we hosted daily phone calls. Because of just the timeliness and the urgency to get information out, we provided information out to offices on a daily basis. We have since now turned over to twice-a-day email updates to continue the role of the communication. We have online resources. We post information on our deputy registrar website for them to get information on reports, on workarounds, any other viable information. If they weren't able to get some information, we post everything that we send to the deputies. We post this on their website. We have done refresher training. For those that are interested, to date we've held 16 different sessions, one-hour sessions for deputies. We've had about 384 participants in those training sessions, or refresher sessions, and those seems to be going over very well. But in addition, we are also hosting regional training sessions. They started last Friday. They will continue through this week and next week. We are going out to regions across the state and asking deputies to please bring in their questions, maybe some of their transaction work so that we can work with them to see and understand what they're doing, to make some determination about things that might work better for them. But whatever it takes to be able to help alleviate some of that anxiety over the work that they're doing. We have continued to keep monthly stakeholder meetings available. This month was a little bit different, but we certainly had a stakeholder meeting with them last month after the initial launch to get some of that initial feedback, which is very helpful and important for us. And as far as individual customers, we certainly are receiving individual concerns and questions and comments coming from the general public. We are dealing with each of those directly, providing some resolution if we can, providing a solution. We quickly came up with something that we could offer customers if there was a delay due to MMRs that we could offer customers. And so we treat each one of those individually and provide them with some additional service. We are working to keep customers informed because we know that there are information out there that customers are seeking and looking for. So we are trying to keep status dates up to date on our public website that give customers a sense of when they go to our website to contact us, that they know that we are aware of their issue and this is the latest update that we have about that. We've extended our customer service hours for people that want to call in and have questions. We've extended those for a temporary solution, as well as extended overtime to be able to respond to emails and get resolution out to customers. But we also understand that each customer is a unique individual and has unique circumstances. And like I said earlier, we want to work with that customer to figure out the nature of what their concern is and be able to get them some solution as quickly as possible. We continue to ask deputy registrars, the public, or our stakeholders to provide us with this information. We ask for some specific information so we can help understand the nature of what their issue is or where their concern is. I know it takes more time, and that takes a little bit more time away from the deputies being able to do their work, but it's a huge benefit to us to be able to get to the specifics of the issue that they're having so we can zero in and determine what the fix needs to be. How much time it's going to take us, and we can make the fix happen the right way the first time and not have to go back in and make additional changes. But our contact information is all available on the website, easy to get to. I know it's been challenging to be able to make a phone call, to get an email response, we are certainly working to try to work through the additional volume of calls and emails that we've been getting. So we've learned a lot. As with any system like this, as with any project like this, preparation was useful and important, but there are all things that you don't learn until you turn something like this on. And so we agree that this was a major change to the impact of the business processes that not only the deputy registrars do, but also to the internal business process that we do as well. And we recognize the challenges and the difficulties that that created. We realize the importance of a system with this size and nature and capacity, that it would have been more important to spend time doing face-to-face training and giving more of a comprehensive training session to deputy offices than we did. We acknowledge that, and that's why we're doing refresher training now. And we're also going out and doing the regional training sessions as well to be able to open up that conversation and have those discussions with offices that are continuing to have problems with what the work is that they're doing. We know we need to offer better and more timely communication. That is certainly something that we are very aware of, that we did not follow through the way we should have. And we have modified our communication significantly since the way we looked 7 weeks ago. We feel that the twice-a-day emails are much more helpful and more comprehensive, and it keeps us on task to make sure that we are delivering information twice a day out to offices. And we also need to improve our coordination with our interface partners. Those are the entities where we may need them to do a part of our business process for us. It's more of a technical connection that we need to make, and we have several interface partners that we work with. An example would be the money that goes to SWIFT, that goes to U.S. Bank, that process. Not everybody has the same environment. Certainly not everybody's on the same time frame as we are. So we need to work much better and in closer communication with them to make sure that they are aware, they understand the nature of the changes, and that we are in coordination with what needs to get done. Without a doubt, this is a time of transition. And transition can be challenging, it can be exciting, and we are working with the deputies to get through this transition as quickly and as efficiently as possible. We know it's a challenge, and we know also that it is temporary. I think if you ask deputies, they'll tell you it's better today than it was 7 weeks ago, but they're going to say it's not where it should be, and we agree. We still have plenty of work to do. We are working better to get their issues brought forward and address their concerns. We know that the system will be more efficient and more secure as we process vehicle, title, and tab transactions. That is the nature of the system, and we know once we get through this transition, things will improve on that matter. But we also, as to reinforce Commissioner Doman's comments, is we are committed to working through this. We are committed to supporting the deputy registrars and what they need, the support that they need. They are a valued partner to us in this kind of business that we do. And even more so now because of the work that they're doing to be able to enter data into the system to get these records updated accurately, quickly. And that's a benefit and a bonus to all of us. And while I recognize that's different for them, we certainly want to continue to work with them to make sure that we can improve this as we continue to go forward.
Thank you for your presentation. It took quite a bit longer than anticipated. That seems to be the theme of the day. We're going to move ahead to the legislative auditor.
Oh, no.
Welcome to the Transportation Committee today. Please identify yourselves for the record and go ahead with your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Jim Nobles, Legislative Auditor, and with me is Judy Randall, Deputy Legislative Auditor. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for inviting us to be here. And to you also, Representative Baker, thank you for all of your work on this. We know that all of you have been hearing concerns from deputy registrars and citizens, your constituents and others. So have we. And so we have been monitoring the situation. In fact, we were asked some time ago, back several years ago, to start monitoring the development of MNLARS because there were legislative concerns about the amount of money that was being spent, the amount of time that was being taken to develop and roll out this system. And I think it's important to say that this concern that has been expressed to us has been bicameral and bipartisan. We heard first from Senator Dibble that he was very concerned. We also heard from Representative Beard and Representative Hornstein. And now, more recently, we have heard from you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson. And we tried to be responsive to those legislative concerns and do what we can do to understand what is occurring and how it can be fixed. Unfortunately, we are not programmers. And ultimately, there is somebody in a cube somewhere that needs to fix this. But I think it is helpful for the department and all concerned to understand that there is legislative concern, and that is expressed through this committee, through the work of the Office of the Legislative Auditor, from the concerns that are expressed by deputy registrars and citizens. And so I think that degree of pressure, if you want to call it that, encouragement, is helpful. But ultimately, I think we all understand that it is the Department of Public Safety and the people at MNIT that will need to solve this. So, Mr. Chairman, we have been involved. We've issued a report recently and then a follow-up memorandum about some of our concerns. And I'm going to turn it over to Deputy Legislative Auditor Judy Randall. I almost called her a deputy registrar because I think she's so been so involved in this that she almost feels like one. The final thing I want to say is that when all is said and done, and when finally this system is relatively stable, we are committed to going back and doing an audit. Because even though there have been a lot of transactions, and you heard that, the numbers are pretty significant. But what we understand that not all of those transactions were correctly done. And there needs to be some reconciliation of individual transactions, and we are committed to going back and looking and making sure that the department has done those reconciliations to ensure that people were charged the right amount and that the state received the correct amount in revenue. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would like to turn to Judy Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. And I just want to emphasize that I share your concern about how this gets resolved in the end, that we will there will be an accounting. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Judy Randall. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor on the program evaluation side of the office. I just wanted to quickly run through some of the work we've been doing over the past months and years. I believe you have in your packet a copy of this preliminary review we issued, I believe, in June. This was looking at the systems development process that was put in place by MNIT and DVS to develop MNLARS. And I'll just kind of direct your attention to the front page of the report, which kind of sums up our key findings there. And again, this was before it went live. And so this was looking at the process for developing MNLARS. And we did find that the management and security controls that were implemented were what we deemed to be adequate. We saw what we expected to see in terms of developing the process. But, of course, we noted at the time, we don't know if it's going to work, and we can't know if it's going to work until it's been put in place. But what we did notice, and it's already been commented on here today several times, is that there were a lot of communication problems between the department and the stakeholders, deputy registrars and dealers. And at the time we issued this report, we said, you know, folks, you got to be able to work together. I mean, it's what you said, Mr. Chair, and it's what I heard from the department just now. But the mistrust, distrust that I've witnessed is pretty startling to me, honestly. I've been doing this work for almost 20 years, and I know several years ago I issued a report on the Met Council, and at that time I said I've never seen distrust like this, and now this has surpassed that. And I think it gets to what you said at the beginning, Mr. Chair, about people having to work together. DVS, MNIT, deputy registrars, dealers, they have to be able to come together somehow in the same room, speak candidly, and work together to get the answer. Because what I'm finding and what you're finding through the website that you set up, Representative Baker, is that the complaints are coming to other people. Complaints are coming to me. I'm happy to talk to folks, but as Mr. Noble said, I'm not a programmer. I can't solve the problems. I can communicate them along, but then when I communicate them to DVS or MNIT, rightly so, they need the details of, well, how did that transact? What was the person doing when that transaction didn't work? And I don't know because I wasn't that person doing that transaction. So this is a situation where I think going through intermediaries is really inefficient and not getting the state to where it needs to be ultimately, which is getting the system working for everybody. I know everybody's frustrated, but I think people just need to, I don't have a great solution for you, but we need to get people in the room and get it fixed and move on. Anyways, the other thing we issued to you all was in August, we issued just a memo kind of when things were really not going well with MNLARS, just to let you know that we had been monitoring it. Myself and a financial auditor went out to a deputy registrar's office and spoke with them in depth about the issues they were experiencing. I've spoken with a couple of other deputy registrars. I've looked at most, if not all, of the comments submitted to the website to kind of get a handle on what are the problems happening. And I think some of the problems will be resolved as new functionality gets rolled out. Of course, you heard Mr. Meekin talk about how they're addressing things daily, and John Olson spoke about that too. But the thing that we had the most concern about when we issued this memo in early August was that the deputy registrar's bank accounts were not getting swept. So that money was not getting swept into the state treasury. And there were some deputy registrars that had sizable, millions of dollars sizable bank accounts of deposits that hadn't yet been swept into the state treasury. We were alarmed by that. My understanding, and I've seen some transaction records, is that that is now getting caught up, if it's, and the department can speak to whether it's fully caught up. But I think those problems have been resolved, which is good. So I don't think we need to be worried about that issue as much. But I think the next issue that our office will be worried about, and Mr. Nobles already spoke to this, is the reconciliation of the transactions. You know, the information I was hearing was transaction charges were incorrect. Transactions may have been reported duplicate times. And so while there's some level of reconciliation happening between the department and deputy registrars, I think we're going to really want to go in once the dust settles, if you will, and really make sure that customers were charged the right amount, deputy registrars accounted for the right amount and are made whole, that inventory is counted accurately. And so I think there's going to be a long list of things to do once the system is operating correctly. And it's clearly on our radar screen for our financial audit side. And I just also say on the program evaluation side, the topic of DVS and deputy registrars and that relationship has been on our list before in terms of us taking kind of a programmatic look at that relationship, and we certainly will put it on the list again this year for consideration by the Audit Commission for us to take a deeper look in a year. Happy to answer any questions, but that's what we have for now, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Any final comments, Mr. Noble?
Mr. Chairman, I would just like to thank Joe Marvel. He has been tremendous in helping us stay connected to a lot of the concerns, and his work has been very valuable to us. And I know that there are many people in the room as well who really appreciate the connection he has brought to you and to us on these issues. So thank you, Joe. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We only hire the best, and we hope to keep them on fully employed through the end of the year. We will move ahead with testifiers. Again, I hate to cut off questions, but I want to get through all the people who have come to testify to us today, and then we'll have as much time available to questions as we have. So moving on, next, Bill Straczynski is up from the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bill Straczynski, and I'm with Libby Law Office, and I'm here today representing the interests of the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. Kevin Toma extends his greetings, but he unfortunately has a board meeting out of town today, and I'm taking his place. Although I must admit, I did spend last Friday a couple of hours with his staff gathering further information and asking questions regarding the material I'm about to present to you. So thank you. We know these are complex matters, very complex, and our issue specifically relates to the drive-off portions of the statute, whereby we save local units of government, we believe, and law enforcement a lot of time and money because we have our own drive-off system in place with the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. That means that service stations who have somebody drive off, you don't have to take them to the police to prosecute or call the police to make a service call and deal with a particular matter. That process in the past, we actually have access to the state's database through statutory authorization as well as specific contractual relationships. And so we'd always look up that information and process these drive-off information on behalf of our clients, or people who are members of our association. I think what I found out, they were processing about 80 drive-offs a day as of last week, and I know this isn't the biggest issue before this committee today, but it's an important issue to them and to the people as we about to try and collect revenues for our members. So I think that's really important. I think the Department of Public Safety certainly and the DVS realizes some of our issues, but we would like to present them to the committee today at least so you have a more clear understanding about where we are at. I think from a financial perspective, we pay for these transactions. We've always, in fact, we used to put a money into an account that would be there, and it could be swept every day or per transaction. That system no longer is available to us. We have to pay by credit card at the end of the day for all the transactions that occurred that day, and it's a little bit more difficult for us to try and reconcile all of that particular kinds of activity. And I'm not sure myself if this, we're going to go back, eventually get back to the system the way it used to operate. I would hope so. It's difficult to get previous plate information, and that's license plates from plates that have been stolen, for example, or whatever. We go back if the plate is difficult to follow that particular transaction and get that information. We don't get any information regarding body style of the car so that we can incorporate that information into the letters we send out to the people who were drive-off perpetrators. And so it makes it more difficult as well. We'd like to have that kind of information. We simply get very limited information. We still receive no lessee information, but there is legislation introduced in a bill form that will be coming before this legislature next session to address that particular issue. We don't have any information about license plates which are held by dealers for resale. And that becomes problematic because people say they traded the car in or whatever, and so that's difficult for us to follow that transaction. We used to get that kind of information. We have had situations where we got it back information that says the plate's not on record when we have a picture of the plate, and we've sent that in and subsequently been able to get more information. I should back up one moment and share with you that the difference in the main operation, the way we operate today, is that initially we had database access to the system. We could look up that information so that if we had a customer on one of our clients on the line, a gas station, we could access that information and get it to them and have it right away. What's required now with the current system, MNLARS, is that we have to send an email in and fill out a form. We electronically fill out a form, send that into the Department of Motor Vehicle Services. And instead of instantaneously, it's been several hours. An employee of the department pulls that data and that information and gets it back to us in 4 hours or perhaps the next morning if it's an afternoon request. So that's a major dramatic, and it creates a lot more paperwork on our side. And I'm sure it creates an issue for the state of Minnesota to process this as well. And I'm sure they're frustrated with that particular inefficiency. We would like to see it addressed a little bit better and fix that particular problem. I think there are other issues here, but I just look forward to the opportunity to sit down with the agency and get into them and to have this matter perhaps resolved on our behalf. Again, it's 80 plates a day, not significant in the big scheme of things, but it's important to us, and we're providing a service to our members that we think is very important. And we do have a high success rate of collecting drive-off revenue. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Straczynski. We're going to move on. Gay Smith and Laura Laudenbach, I believe, are coming up together. Thank you for coming to our committee today. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation. And be as succinct as possible. We have a limited amount of time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Laura Laudenbach. I represent the Public Office of Stearns County today.
Mr. Chair, representatives, I am Gay Smith, and I represent a private corporation of Deputy Registrar in the city of South St. Paul in the City Hall. First, Mr. Chair, members, we have had difficulties these past several years with this situation. We have many, many deputy registrars here today, many of our customers, citizens that we have worked with for many, many years, that now we cannot serve that citizen or that dealer. Recently, we've had to tell 11 of our dealerships we could no longer work with them. That was one of the hardest things to do. We have worked with these dealerships. We have had kids together. We've gone to weddings together. It's a very close group. If one title clerk leaves and goes to another dealership, They're already trained. They're ready to go. So in the old system that we are looking at in the past tense, we have a system that, yes, was old, but it somewhat functioned. Now we have a system that we are turning customers away. We are renewing tabs. We are renewing those stickers in prior owner's name because we cannot transfer the vehicle. We cannot do both of them at the same time. We cannot transfer a vehicle to a 17-year-old, even though it's legally possible. And kick in whenever you want. There are many transactions. The deputy registrars did put together a statement last January, and we put another one together before the rollout. A lot of the functionality that we are dealing with right now was referenced in that communication. The hard part for us is that we want to serve those citizens, we want to serve those dealerships, we want to serve all the customers that come into our office. But unfortunately, we cannot do that any longer. The process currently, we have expedites, we have what's called an electronic vehicle title registration system. All of those processes have now turned into a MNLARS transaction. That MNLARS transaction now is a twofold system, sometimes three. For our operating systems on our computers, in order to do the 60-day permit, 31-day permits, we must still be in Internet Explorer 11 in a compatibility view mode. It does not work in Google, does not work in anything else. The process of MNLARS in different operating systems is also different. It's important that when we type in our password, we should be able to reset our password. I have employees that are waiting hours to get back up and running. So it's important that we're able to help them in a timely manner. The process that is currently out here, no test, no pilot, was completed. There was no time studies done on the process. We know that the dealer-heavy deputy registrars can no longer serve in the volume, and what that does is it makes the volume of funds that is going to go into the state's coffer much less. We used to process around 600 to 700 transactions a day, and that transaction means one transaction number for the vehicle, whether it's registration and title or just title. Currently, those transaction counts are three or four different numbers. That's why we see those transactions higher. There are several areas of concern, and we do not have that relationship with the department we would like. And it has been a long-standing situation. There have been areas where we want to work together. We try. We are working on the stakeholder committees. But it's so important that you're listened to as a user. As Bill said earlier, you know, this is what he had. He had that system. Now we're finding that the data integrity of our records are not there. We've got wrong information that has been brought over to this new system, wrong expiration dates. There's a lot of finances that are being missed, a lot of things that are not getting paid for. There are a lot of workarounds. I think Laura had, this is our workaround. 44 emails of workarounds in a month.
Gay, could for those that may not know what a workaround is, could you just describe what's involved with a workaround? How does that affect you at your office?
A workaround, what that is You look at the transaction, you try and figure out, okay, where do I need to put this? You open the job aid, you think, okay, I need a duplicate lien card for my bank. This bank, if they don't get this duplicate lien card, this dealership is going to have to buy this back. So we apply for a duplicate lien card. Well, that's kind of a title, so we go to the title job aid. Well, no, it says, now go to manage liens. So we'll go to the manage liens in the job aid, and then we follow that. But there's nothing in that job aid on a duplicate lien card. So on the duplicate lien card, well, let's get creative and try and figure out how to do it. And we can process that by going into assigning a lien. And what is happening, members and chair, is that things are getting processed and updated and titles issued without any funds being paid. And it's also creating double and triple records. So that's where the data integrity is very frustrating. The workarounds are a way for us to try and figure out how to push the money in somehow. And then if we're giving a duplicate semi-trailer plate, we're actually giving them a free plate and not issuing $4.50 to that customer. And then we are to put our $10 filing fee in some other area where we can't really monitor on all the employees. So not only is it a nightmare for the state and for the deputies, but it's also a nightmare for any manager in an office to try and say, okay, did you remember to put that $10 fee in that we don't really have to put in MNLARS any longer? It's fees we're collecting and fees that we're statutorily assigned to, but now, okay, if we don't put it here, we can charge it again over in somewhere else. Or another workaround is we have to do a duplicate title, but it needs to have a new lien holder. So that lien holder will go on the new title, but, oh, my gosh, we can't do a duplicate title, release a lien, and add a lien. So now we have to wait for that customer to get that title, bring it back in, and pay again, where it used to be done in one process. So workarounds to us is a 2-3-4 area process. And if we need to give that customer a 60-day permit because we can't transfer the title, now we must give them something else to drive on. So rather than the dealer giving a third 21-day permit, we're going to give them a 60-day permit. Well, then that we have a new login and ID number for the old system that we have to go into. And now that system does not link to the new MNLARS system. So law enforcement are having a hard time figuring out how that number on the back of that permit relates to that vehicle. So one area, too, where we struggled with was the support on the rollout. We did not have that support. We were in a week of silence. And still, we don't get much response because staff says, well, I don't know how we can do this. I don't know how it can be done. We had a barcode reader that took a plate as 9:45 instead of 7:45, thinking barcoding rather than typing would be less of an issue. No way to correct it. Zero way to correct it. So the deputy had to issue those plates out. They still have them in their inventory. Send them to that customer. And that customer was wondering, well, why do I have these plates? So issues like that, we cannot see the fees until we go to the cart, and there's no way to correct it. So then we have to go back and start all over. And sometimes that was two or three times.
Thank you, Gay. I want to give your partner a chance to be heard before we have to move on.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and representatives. I just wanted to address a little bit of the office closeout and the sweep reports that were discussed earlier. And what we did at Stearns County is we actually just made a little spreadsheet, if anybody is interested in having a copy of it. But as you can see, over the course of the new MNLARS rollout, we have to close our offices with the number the dollar amount that the state requires that we entered into the system. About a week or so later, we'll get a sweep report that may or may not line up with what we closed out at. In the beginning, the closeout versus the actual sweep was really off, but now, you know, since about the 2nd of August, we've really started to match up in our numbers, which we're very thankful for. Unfortunately, for Stearns County, we have a treasurer's office that also tracks our money. And in Stearns County, as of September 5th, from what we can see on our report, the state has drawn $15,000 more from our bank account than what we were told they were going to pull. Or it's possible, because we don't know the exact dates of how much was pulled at the time, you know, that we're underdrawn. We're not sure, and we've tried to reach out to the liaisons. Numerous times our treasurer's office has reached out, and as of Thursday last week, we actually got a call back about it that they said they were going to be looking into it. But for me, that's my taxpayers' money. That's our citizens. They're the ones that I don't need to take $15,000 more of their money. They're already paying a lot into the state that they're required to pay in. So anything extra, every penny needs to be accounted for. In the month of July and August, both Stearns County offices, we were actually down $12,000 in motor vehicle transactions. Ironically, our transaction customer count was up over 300 customers. So that the customers that were coming in regards to missing tabs from the state. They possibly renewed online in July. Maybe they've come in three times for, you know, their July tabs. It's now the middle of August, and our only answer is to give them a 60-day permit on a transaction that really pre-Minlars was a one-minute or less transaction, and now it's, you know, a lot of people have to take the day off work, and to me that's their job, and they shouldn't really have to do that for a sticker. So the other thing, in the month of July alone, our county has paid over $3,500 of overtime, and if this process continues because of how much longer it takes us to process these transactions, I just think in the end this is our taxpayer money, and I don't feel right taking that from them. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for listening to me.
Thank you both for coming forward. We're going to move along. I know you could probably go on, but time does not permit. Now, next up, Cindy Geis. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Cindy Geis. I'm the County Auditor Treasurer for Scott County, but I'm not here representing my county at this time. I'm here representing the Minnesota Association of County Officers. I'm one of the legislative chairs of that organization, which represents all 87 counties. Ultimately, I'm here to maybe just let you guys know the reach out and some options that I asked Tom Henderson to consider. A couple of weeks ago, I put a call into Mr. Henderson, and if you remember the duplicate title issue last year, I brought forward some language to allow counties to issue duplicate titles. And at that time, we were maybe talked to a little bit in a different way outside of the committee hearing, and they challenged us to as counties, to say, why don't you ever reach out to us? We're here, we're your partners, we really want to work together with you, and here you brought forward this language, you need me to consult us. And that was not our intent, to go around their back. Ultimately, our whole goal is to make sure that our customers' requests can get fulfilled in the most efficient way. So with that, goes in the back of my mind is the whole Minlars debacle rolled out. I placed a call into Mr. Henderson a couple weeks ago, and with that, and tongue-in-cheek, Mr. Henderson is was a little bit cautious, because he really wants to have a conversation with someone that's not going to threaten him, yell at him. I extended my hand to say, I'm here to help work with you, and I'm going to represent the counties in this, at least the county deputy registrars, to say, we want to work with you, because we know that there's a lot of challenges with Minlars, and we have a long way to go to try to get some resolution. So with that, I say that ultimately what we want is we want those issues resolved. We all are on the same page with that. I'm not going to sit here and belabor all of the issues that these registrars are having. I think most of you have probably got a laundry list of them already. Ultimately, we want to help them prioritize potentially because we want to help them focus on the ones that maybe where the majority of the customers are not getting their needs met rather than working on the one or two small ones that occur very infrequently. Let's look at the big picture ones. So help them prioritize the issues. We also know, as it's been referred to, there's a whole driver's component of this that's going to be rolled out. In my county, I've been involved in many more software implementations than I would care to admit, and it is just an awful process. It is very long and cumbersome. But if you do it right, you don't have to rule it out and say, well, with software implementations of this size, we anticipate that there's going to be a lot of hiccup, because there really doesn't have to be if you do it right. I reached out to Mr. Henderson. I said, let us partner with you. Let us be part of a work group that sits down with you and takes a look at the driver's side as well as the vehicle side and try to determine how is this best rolled out. We can be your test counties. You want a beta group? You should have real-life examples. Don't sit back in the offices and just test this on your own. Reach out to the counties. We can provide some transactions, test it, call out the deficiencies and the conflicts, and help with providing that resolution to try to make it work. In addition, when there are known issues and bugs, we can help with the testing of those patches before they're rolled out to the bigger population, and now you have 187 deputy registrar's offices with the same issues. So reach out to us and let us be part of that solution. We also know that there's the duplicate title and the real ID that's coming forward. Those two pieces in addition, not just the MNMARS, but with these major implementations that you're going to have to do, we as a county and our organization would like to be part of that solution. We do not want to face our customers and say, I am so sorry, but we can't do it again. We can't help you. We're going to have a lot of workarounds. We want that person to come in, and it's seamless to them. They have no idea that the state rolled out a new system, nor do they care. But we care, and the state cares, and you care. So let us make sure that it doesn't happen again. And now I'm going to plant a seed with my little legislative hat on. And the other thing that I want to bring up is you heard the private and the public deputy registrar's office talking about people coming into our offices over and over and over again. Our lines are out the door. It takes us a long time to process these transactions. And even with a good MNMARS implementation, the amount of time it's going to take us to process those same transactions that we did pre-MNMARS is much, much longer because we're doing the data entry on behalf of the state. For your consideration as we get into the next legislative session, I would like you to put some thought into possible reallocation of those fees, not an additional fee. I don't think that any of our people need to pay any more money for a service that they feel is inadequate today. But if we're going to be doing the work, maybe that fee allocation could be split a little bit more fairly to pay for the private and the public deputy registrars to ensure that they're not put out of business. And with that, Mr. Chair, members, thank you.
Thank you very much for coming forward. I believe we have a trio up next, Amber Backus, Mike Roeder, and Kyle Allison. Please identify yourselves for the record, and I apologize if I mispronounced anyone's name.
Oh, you did great, Mr. Chair. I'm Amber Backus. I'm the Director of Government Affairs with the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association here on behalf of the 384 franchise new car and truck dealers, a couple whom you'll be hearing from today as well. In January, I came before this committee and requested a delay in the launch of MNMARS until all current functionality offered through the legacy mainframe system was available. The system was adequately tested, and disruptions in service would be kept to a minimum. I am back before you today to report that when the system went live on July 24, it was unable to process some of the most basic of transactions for our dealers since no testing was done, and disruptions in service have been endemic. To the agency's credit, they have been working around the clock to fix the problems and are making progress on several fronts. That being said, 2 months into MNMARS, it is far from reaching its stated goals of reducing transaction processing times, improving data access and accuracy, improving customer assistance and communication, and reducing paperwork and paper flow, and I'd like to elaborate on each of these points. With regard to reducing transaction processing times, going into the launch of MNLARS, the backlog on issuing titles had been reduced to 7 days for new car sales and 20 days for used. Since MNLARS launched, many of our dealers have yet to see a title produced for a new car sale. Duplicate titles, which a dealer may request for a customer's trade-in at a cost of $17.50 each, have yet to materialize. Some dealers have requests for duplicates lingering from June of 2017. License plates for new customers, which could have been issued in the same day and definitely within the 21-day window that the permits are issued for, are running 45 to 50 days behind, well in excess of the 42-day period DVS granted for temporary permits, leaving many dealers fending off swarms of calls from angry customers and wondering what to do when no plates have arrived within 42 days since the agency hasn't officially authorized issuance of a third 21-day permit. Furthermore, the glitches in the system significantly slowed the work of deputy registrars, as you've heard, and many deputies with big books of dealer business held off on processing those transactions so they could focus on serving customers at the counter. As a result, many dealers are accumulating $2 late fees, even though the work was submitted to deputies within the statutory window of 10 business days. On the front of improving data access and accuracy, we've heard a number of stories of consumers being over or undercharged during the registration process. Others can speak to the misapplied tab renewal charges, but with regard to vehicle sales, the base value of a vehicle isn't always computing accurately, leading to too much or too little being charged in registration and sales taxes. And in some instances, the proper destination fees are missing. So a customer who lives in a county that institutes a wheelage tax or a city that levies a local government sales tax isn't being charged, shorting the local government of that revenue. Some dealers have also discovered that when they took a trade-in prior to the July 24th MNLARS launch and flagged that vehicle as held for resale, that flag didn't transfer over after the conversion. So customers no longer in possession of a vehicle are angrily calling the dealership to find out why they are being charged tab fees on a vehicle they no longer own. These are major flaws in the system that if a private business had engaged in these practices, the regulators would not look too kindly. So it's frustrating to us in a way that the state's getting a pass that private businesses wouldn't. Despite making repeated requests to the agency to get dealers information about shortcomings in the system, notices about deficiencies aren't being communicated. A workaround for titling and registering leased vehicles was created because initially the system was having difficulty with that. But that workaround wasn't communicated to dealers, many of whom held off on submitting those transactions. And even as of last Friday, we heard from dealers in Greater Minnesota who believe lease transactions still can't be processed, despite a temporary fix being created 3 weeks ago. The DVS licensing office is trying to be helpful. They're the regulator of our dealers, so they're trying to answer questions. But the information they're being provided to our dealers is different from what they're hearing if they do get through on the MNLARS helpline or if they talk to their local deputy registrar. So this is only adding to the confusion about what's working, what's not working, what time frames are for fixes. And furthermore, when some processes were changed with MNLARS launched, no notice was made to dealers. So when applying for a title, the deputies are being asked to input new categories of information, including the color, model, and fuel type of the vehicle. But since no one communicated this to dealers, they are not submitting this information to the deputies when making the title application. So oftentimes deputies are filling in unknown, but this is going to make collecting a surcharge on electric vehicles very tough to do when that comes effective on January of 2018 if that information hasn't been collected at the time of titling. With regard to reducing paperwork and paper flow, dealers have seen an uptick in paperwork since the launch of MNLARS. Their title clerks are having to keep track of whether customers have received plates within the first 21-day window, and if not, create and mail out second 21-day permits. And without a functioning electronic vehicle titling and registration system, dealers have to again fill out paper applications to submit to deputy registrars. MNLARS doesn't have a print screen function for our dealers to use either, so they're having to cut and paste records into files to create a proof of transactions that have been initiated. And then they're also spending time chasing a number of other complaints from customers and creating paper trails to cover their tracks to make sure nothing else falls through the cracks. And with me today, I have Kyle Allison of Hopkins Honda and Mike Rader of Sears Imported Autos, who can speak more to the heartburn the MNLARS system is causing not only their customers, but their employees.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Rader.
Hi.
Go ahead. Mr. Chairman, General Manager for Sears Imported Autos. We're a family-owned dealership that has 113 employees. Since MNLARS has rolled out, we have had over 232 transactions resulted in late fees. For a dealership that averages 190 new and used combined sales a month. Since this has also come out from the program, we have had to reissue 198 21-day permits, and we're skating the edges here, but we've issued 23 customers their third 21-day permit. We've had over $2,000 in FedEx charges just to keep our customers, to get the 21-day permits to take care of them. Our deputy registrar told us they wouldn't take any of our paperwork data for August, so we've been trying since then to get our paperwork in, get the transactions taken care of, get the information back from our customers. But everybody is so backed up, we are just not able to take care of the customers. We are averaging so far about 35 to 40 customers a week calling upset, not understanding why they don't get their information.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead.
Hi, my name's Kyle Allison. I'm with the Luther Automotive Group. I am the general manager of Luther Hopkins Honda. We've been in business in Hopkins for a number of years. We employ 169 people, and we've had the same problems that Mr. Rader spoke of. We've issued an additional, in excess of 300 additional 21-day permits since it's been this has been executed. We've had more than 169 instances of late fees being charged. It's just really been, I can't emphasize strongly enough, though, it's easy to talk about these numbers of 300 additional 21-day permits. But the amount of anguish and time on our customers and our employees has been really hard to deal with, just because it seems that no matter how hard we try to get ahead of it and to call people before these things are going to expire, we're running against the clock, and therefore those people many times are calling us. So in many of these situations, we're taking two or three or four different phone calls from the same people trying to figure out what's going on. And it just puts an extreme amount of pressure on all of our people, all of our teammates, and everybody who works with us, and not to say that our customers too. The other issue that we seem to really be struggling with is the issue of duplicate titles. I've heard that said before too, is that we no longer have the ability to get a duplicate title sent to the dealership. So therefore, when somebody trades in a car and they do not have their title, they cannot find it. That used to be a one-step transaction for the most part, where we could take care of everything with the customer as they were sitting in front of us. That no longer is the case. So those duplicate titles get sent back to the customer, and then many times they forget what to do with it. They don't remember they were going to get it. They can't figure out why they're getting it. It just creates a lot of unknowns and a lot of problems. And if I summarize what a lot of people have talked about today, it just seems under this new system that many things that were being able to be done in one step are now being done in many steps. And that's kind of the real heart of the problem. Because, you know, the more steps that get added, of course, the more ambiguity and the more questions that people have as to what's going on with their car. Furthermore, it's for the business, it's difficult when we sell a car and we're not able to answer questions as well as we'd like to because of the system that's in place now and how hard it is for us to communicate with people what's going to happen down the road. And many times they look at us like, you know, you're supposed to be the expert, and in the current situation, we're unable to answer many of those questions. And it's put us in a real tough spot with our guests and our customers that are coming in. Thank you.
Thank you for that. As long as we have the dealers up here, I don't know which of you might be able to address this, but could someone address the financial impact to dealers?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Beyond just paying late fees for customers and ordering duplicate titles for customers, trying to help with that, maybe paying for new plates since they're unable to transfer the current plates on a trade-in, there's definitely a financial impact of not being able to get those duplicate titles. While the law doesn't require us to have title in hand when we resell a trade-in, oftentimes your business partners do have expectations that you will have a good title to show proof of ownership with in a timely manner. Many of the auction companies around, the wholesalers that our members do business with, require a title to be produced within 21 to 28 days. And because we're not getting those, then you are unable to take those trade-ins and put them on the wholesale market. And I know for some of our smaller dealers, that's creating some significant cash flow issues then, where they're sitting on inventory they can't do anything with, and that's costing them thousands and thousands of dollars.
And the other challenge, if I may speak to it also, is with our, like the deputy registrar stated, you know, with our employees working to try to straighten out these problems, the overtime and the amount of time they're spending on this is become excessive also.
Thank you. Thank you for coming forward today. We'll move ahead. Next, I have Diane Hazlett of Waterford. Thank you for being with us today. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
My name is Diane Hazlett, and I'm a retired probation officer and currently am a sales associate for the Hennifer company down in Mankato, Minnesota. I'm from Waterville. And compared to the issues that have been being spoken today, mine is really quite small because it's just my tabs. It's my tabs, it's my license plate, and I went online like I do every year, and it's easy peasy. It's very simple, and it only takes maybe less than a couple weeks to get my tabs. My car broke down. I bought a new car, so my tabs were up in July, and it turned out, well, one of the biggest things is there's no communication. Because a week went by, 2 weeks went by, 3 weeks went by, and I hadn't heard anything. And I look in my mailbox, and I'm not getting, and nothing's in there, which was unusual. From my years in law enforcement, in the jails, and as a probation officer, I realized you can't assume anything is being done correct. You can't assume that somebody is doing their job, and that is why you're not getting whatever you need to get done. So I called. Now, I called the phone number that's on the website, and if anybody, I mean, you all have a different number to call, but for me, just the regular citizen, the number that's posted is always busy, whether it's 8 o'clock in the morning, 11 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, doesn't matter, it's always busy, you can't get through, so I need to find other areas to find information. So I call Mankato and explain to her that I don't have my tabs. And she says, I says, is that a problem? She said, yes, it is, but this is not the right place to call. So I called Waseca, which is a satellite in a town which is 10 miles south of me. And they're a small office, but they're wonderful. They're always very helpful with information. And she explained to me, come on down, we'll get you a duplicate. You know, you're up for your license plate. Come on down and we'll get you a duplicate. Okay, and it's not going to cost you a thing. Okay, great. Because when I went to the website to look for a phone number, I'm looking at my information. Now my information is quite unusual because it has a license plate on there that is foreign to me. It's not on my vehicle. And I thought, well, I must be getting a new license plate. This is the license plate number they're going to assign to me. So when I went to Waseca and she pulled up my information and she pulled up that license plate, she said, do you have a Pontiac? I says, no, I have a Honda. And she said, well, this license plate that assigns to you is now assigned to two people, a person with a Pontiac and also my vehicle. And she also said, this is not this is an unusual license plate number because numbers usually go before the letters. And this one that was assigned to me had letters and then numbers. So she pulled out a license plate, and she said, we can take care of this really fast. They gave me a license plate. And she is going into the system and realizing that the only way that I can get a license plate and a tag is it's going to cost me money. There's no zero. There's no way. See, if I lost my license plate, then it would cost me $16, but if the state is losing it or is not giving it to me, it's still going to cost me $16. And that would have been a real easy fix, and I wouldn't be here talking to you today if I paid $16, but I chose not to because I already paid $66, which was more than what my receipt says I was supposed to pay. I really have to give it to Wasika because she spent an awful long time on the phone talking to the people at the motor vehicles, which I couldn't get to. But even she was on hold forever, and she said, it's no problem, they're going to send you your stuff. Okay. She said, it was like getting up to 5 o'clock, she said, you're going to have to come back, and and I'll get you your information. So now I understand that day I took off so I could talk to her. 2 days later, I took time off of work again to come down and talk to her to find out that she didn't get any further. But she did give me this piece of paper to put on my back windshield that says I'm okay. It's got my driver's light or my plate on there. Well, that was a month ago, and I have it until October. It's on my back. So, but still, again, from my background, these are the same people who couldn't get me information. They couldn't send me a letter to tell me there's a problem. These are the same people that she had a hard 2 days to find information from that are just going to magically get me my tabs and my license plate. So I started writing letters because, again, I couldn't get a hold of anybody at the driver's license. And so that's how I'm here today, because I sent a letter to my representative to ask what do I do next. I really think just the person on my end, a letter in the mail to tell me there's a problem, and it's going to take longer for us to get you your license plate and tabs. And here's what you need so that the police are not going to ask you, where's your tabs? Would have been helpful.
Thank you very much for coming forward. Next I have Ross Larson. Thank you for being with us today. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead.
Ross Larson, Stillwater. I went to DMV out there to get tabs for my wife's vehicle. She's on active duty out of state. The gal rang everything up, $16. That'd be $16, then I assume she put it in a cart or something. And when it went to the cart, it went up to $405. I said, oh, no, I ain't making that. She's like, well, you pay that. Here's a form you fill out. Send it in, they'll give you a rebate. I'm like, no, it's $16. That's what you told me. So I said, just cancel the thing. Well, we can't. So I spent an hour and a half at the DMV while they made phone calls back and forth. And finally, they figured out how to delete the transaction. She tried like 3 more times to put this through with the military orders and everything. And it's still, once it went into the cart, it went up to the $405. And then she handed me that piece of paper to contact my congressman and the DVS downtown. I got a hold of them, and I had to drive to the downtown to the DVS department and talk to the main guy down there. He did get me the tabs for the $16, but that's why I'm here. It's something with the veterans the computer wouldn't take that.
I said we weren't going to ask questions, but I just want to clarify your testimony. So if you had paid the $405, you would have gotten tabs that day, but you would have given the state at least temporarily some over $300.
Correct, $385.
Out of your own pocket.
Correct.
Thank you. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks.
Next, Jay Pernu. Sorry if I butchered your name. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Jay Perno. I'm from Lake Elmo near Stillwater. got a couple quick issues that we went through. My wife and I have both purchased cars. My wife on July 28th, I purchased one a week later because I was kind of jealous. But so she had a vanity plate. First problem. So that was transferred to a new car, supposedly. It's in the process. I checked on it on last Friday, the 8th, just to see where it's at because we haven't seen anything. And they didn't have record of the new car. They still had her old car. It looked like they knew it had been traded, but they didn't know that she has a new car. So we went through that. It's not a big deal. She's got her permit, and we're moving on with that. My situation was a little more difficult. Also had a vanity plate. And when I decided to purchase the car, my tabs were up right around the same time, and I just couldn't remember when I was at the dealer if I paid for the new tabs or not. So I talked to my dealer. He said, well, just cancel the check. And I'm like, well, that doesn't sound right. So anyway, I purchased the car. I went to the DMV right away, and I said, is there any way to cancel it? I didn't see a letter at home. I'm not sure if I did online. And they said, you know, our systems are in bad shape. We really can't deal with this right now. You're probably best off canceling it, but it'll probably cost you $30. I said, fine. It was going to save me $245, so $210 at the end of the day. So I was fine with that, and I was patient. About 3 weeks later, I got the motor vehicle registration suspended letter, 20 days from the date of the closed invoice. So I had 20 more days to deal with the issue. So I was going to wait it out, and I got my pencil out, and I wrote a letter, and then typed it up and sent it to where the letter came from. And I also went to my local DMV, Stillwater, who was really good about it. But they went on the system. They said, no, you're okay. Just wait for your new tabs. Be patient. What you did is fine. And I said, okay. They said, let us call, I think, St. Paul, just to check. So they got on the line, got put on hold, and I probably waited 45 minutes. And I said, after about 5 minutes, I said, I'll sit down and, you know, let you wait on it. There's a long line. Wait on other people. And they never did answer. So I said, you know, can you just call me? And they said yes, and I didn't really expect a call back, and I didn't get one because they were just swamped. So then last Friday, I got a thing in the mail, and it was new tabs. I was all excited. But it was for my old car that I hadn't paid for the tabs yet. So this is a Ford. I'm waiting for a Hyundai. So I'm like, what do I do? So I went back, sat there for a while. They got online, and then it got kind of ugly. They said, well, they could suspend your license. I'm not sure if I would drive the car right now. You look good in the database, but St. Paul, I guess that's who they're talking to, said it doesn't look good for you. You should probably not drive right now. And I said, well, what am I supposed to do? Can I just pay you the $245? And they said, well, it looks like you're already paid for it. And I'm like, I'm kind of stuck here. I don't know what to do. So I actually left. I said, you know, give me a call if you get a hold of them. They're on hold again. They're trying to talk to a cashier over there. But at the same time, I actually contacted, I contacted Mr. Marble. I called him up, and I was kind of frustrated because I had an email from him, from the email that I got from my dealer saying, if you have issues, go to this website. Awesome website. At least I have had someone to talk to. Appreciate it. But right now, as it sits, I've got tomorrow my vehicle is registration is suspended. I'm not sure if my license revoked. Took the back roads to get here. just kidding. So I'm not sure what to do. So I'm just here to tell my story.
Thank you, Jay, for coming forward. By the way, you know, when I talk about my wife's plates, I call them specialty plates, not vanity plates.
Is she up next to testify? She up next?
I don't know. No, next up we have Bruce Vruwink. I probably butchered that one too, but we'll see. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead.
Well, Chairman, my name is Bruce Vruwink. I'm kind of here at the arrangement of Dave Baker. I see when you got to my name, he put his hand, his head in his hands. He didn't know how it was going to get butchered either. So it's kind of like it's spelled. I'm a, I own a small business. I'm a very probably untypical Minnesota entrepreneur. I buy and sell everything. I have a used car dealer license. I am a dealer for in DNR for boats, snowmobiles, and all that kind of stuff. First of all, I would say, in my experience with the state of Minnesota, they are security paranoid. Nowhere when my dealing with the U.S. government or anywhere do I ever encounter the degree of security paranoia that I experience in the state of Minnesota. It actually slows down. I'm not against security, but it takes time when you got to go back and do things time and time over again. It gets old, and when it can't happen anyway. But my experience, I want to go back and bring in what these new car dealers bring in. I'm a used car dealer. I accumulate some of my inventory through the auctions. So I go to the auction and buy a car, and these gentlemen have maybe brought it there as a trade-in. They don't have a title. And like you said, the auctions give you a X amount of time to produce a title, and if you don't produce a title in that time, they are under the obligation to you can bring it back, and they'll refund your money. Well, in the meantime, you found a customer for it, and you sell it. And my latest little venture is buying and selling new vehicles. I purchase new vehicles from the dealer and resell them. You try and deal with a lender. I don't sell everything in Minnesota. I sell a lot of stuff out of state and so on. When you get a customer that goes into a lender for financing, and the first question out of their mouth is, produce a title. If you find a real nice one, they'll take a title, a license app for it. But I'd say 99 out of 100 of them will not swallow that. They want an actual title. I got examples here. I bought vehicles back in 7th of August. I've been talking to Kay Smith. Her email dated September 8th, a month later. Paperwork for your expedited title has not yet come into the state of Minnesota. Part of that fault is with the dealer. Part of that fault is with the deputy registrar. But the end fault is I got to go to my banker and say, Bruce can't sell his car, so we got to extend that loan on that car. Believe me, I like to have a nice relationship with my lender, and that doesn't make for good relationships. I got a friend up in North Dakota that's a heavy truck dealer in multiple states, new franchise. And I ran into this a few years ago when I was in Arizona. I can walk into an office in Arizona, literally walk in, within 1 hour, walk out of that office with a title in my hand. This new franchise truck dealer, when he, if he trades it in or if he gets a repo truck and he's marketing it in some other area of the region that he has to furnish a title, he puts all the paperwork in the envelope and sends it to his dealership out in Bismarck, and they walk into the capital there, and an hour later he's got a title so he can collect funds for that vehicle. Why can't we do that in Minnesota? That's my question. Why can't we do that in Minnesota? The deputy registrars, I do business with multiple of them, they hate this system. They put a workload on them without any compensation. The one gal made a reference to it, changing the ratio of them. I mean, you can't imagine how much work he settled on. They transferred all the work from St. Paul here to the local deputy registrar without no compensation. Who can look in the mirror in the morning and see yourself and say, I've done that to somebody? I can't do that. we used to be able to expedite titles. I could expedite a title and have one back in 4 to 5 days. They did away with the expediting, at least in the way it was done before. Who did they expect was going to absorb all this workload? You had the normal backlog on a title before was about 45 days in reality. So now you take that 45 days worth of work and you put it in a pile over here, and so that Joe Blow walks in today and buys a car and applies for it, he's supposed to get a new title instantly in Minlars. What's happened to this pile of 45 days work over here that happens that never gets any attention to? It just sits there. It just sits there. It never gets attacked. I'm a typical, very, very cynical, concerned citizen that's expecting some kind of service. So.
Well, thank you for coming forward today.
Thank you for the time.
And anybody who can buy new cars and sell new cars is quite an entrepreneur. I don't know if I could do that. That brings us to the end of our list of testifiers. I would invite the folks from the department to come back forward, because I think most of our questions are going to center on the department personnel. I'm not sure who wants to sit at the table, but that's you two. You can flip a coin back there if you'd like. Members, I've got a short list here already. I'm sure there are other members that have questions. So please get Mr. Marble's attention, get your name on the list. We will be adjourning at 3:30, so please keep your questions short and get to the point, and we'll keep moving along. First up, I have Vice Chair John Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the commissioners as well as the director. One of the things that I think we're hearing is a frustration with what was kind of being considered the state agency mentality, which is that we work in a vacuum, that we at the state level kind of know what's best, and then everybody else has to fall in and do what we think is right. And if I remember right, Director Olson, you said that now you are starting to look at going to individual driver's license bureaus and checking to see how their business is being run. Is that my correct understanding?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, what I intended with the regional meetings that we're doing is to be able to go and do a question and answer with those offices, so offices can bring examples of transactions that they might feel challenging or having problems with, and they can come and get additional support or conversation from us. That is the intent of the regional sessions.
And Mr. Chair? Thank you. And I think what I heard you say was that you are starting to have meetings out in greater Minnesota in which you're actually looking at how they do their business, what kind of transactions they're doing, and so forth, which to me is kind of backwards. It seems to me that if you're doing a process in which you are really implementing how it's going to be implemented out in the working world, that would be the first thing that you would be checking in on, is to see how the processes are being done, how they're doing the processes in order to make the system work the way they are. And when you find differences between the way you want it to work and their processes, then you would have to have some sort of detailed implementation and training in order to keep that process moving smoothly. It seems like that hasn't been done up to this point, yet we're 8 years from the beginning. And one of the things that I hear a lot of you are saying, well, this is a once-in-a-generation change. But that hasn't changed since 2008 when it was first initiated. We've always known that. And so why are we putting together a program, and why are we dealing with that in a way in which it's top-down driven rather than bottom-up, at least getting the information research? And how can we have kind of any confidence that we're going to be able to improve when we still have this mentality that at state we know what's best?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it might have been the way I delivered the message, so let me go back and kind of reiterate that. We have had deputy involvement since we started the development of Minlars. The deputies have provided a representative that sits on the development team and provides insight into their business process, how their workflow goes, and they've been a critical partner with us through that development phase. The training that we're doing now is more on helping them get adjusted to the MIMAR system. So we did do that. Like I said earlier, it's probably a lesson learned. We need to do that better. We need to do more face-to-face before we launch a system like this, and that's something that we're taking into consideration. But we did have deputy involvement in the development of the system.
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't expecting to be up so soon. You know, we've talked about the workarounds, and can you express to me, are those workarounds temporary or permanent?
Ms. Holtz.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, they are most definitely temporary. The workarounds were a result of functionality that we knew would not be in MIMARS when we launched, and they are also a result of things that we've discovered since we've launched, but they're only intended to be temporary.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Howe, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many workarounds are there, and when you identify a workaround, how long does it take you to distribute that to the deputy registrars so all the deputy registrars know about it?
Ms. Holt.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I don't have an exact count on workarounds. I can get you that information. Workarounds go out in email updates, which go out twice a day. Once we have a workaround that we've determined what the process is, we send those out to deputy registrar offices in one of the two daily update emails.
Can you give us an estimate of how many workarounds? I mean, I know you don't have an exact number in front of you. Is it 5 or is it 50?
Closer to 75.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I would say somewhere in between that. But I can't speak to definite terms. I'd rather get you an exact number.
It's kind of a shame when I'm a better guesser than you are. Are you finished, Representative Howe?
Well, I've got a couple more if you're going to let me go, Mr. Chair.
Well, I'll give you one more.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are the sweeps now being done regularly, and is there a time frame where you look at reconciliation of those numbers that they talked about, the differences in what has been swept and what they believe needs to be there? Is there a time frame when you believe that you're going to have that, you're going to do those reconciliations so often, or is it you're going to do this, or have you figured that out yet?
Yes, also.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the sweep process has been refined and it's much more efficient, but it's not foolproof yet. So we have staff that work directly with the deputy offices, walking them through the closeout process, defining those deficiencies, and we communicate with the deputies once there is a deficiency or a discrepancy identified. And so deputies are aware of what the process is for that. Because we're continuing to refine the closeout process and we continue to make adjustments on that, we have not yet determined when those adjustments will be made. But we have them all logged, we've got them categorized, and we will move forward with that.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for having me in today. I had a couple of questions, but first a comment. I got drawn into this because I am sort of in IT and I'm on Chair Baker's committee. And I went in foolishly on a Thursday afternoon to try to renew my tabs, and an hour and a half later I walked out frustrated. I went back to talk to my deputy registrar, who is a private registrar, and as I was walking up to the counter, she gave me the "I'm going to hurt you" look. And being somewhat protective of myself, I thought, well, maybe we can diffuse this somehow. But members and to the testifiers, I've heard a lot of that. Deputy registrars all over the state, they just want to serve their customers well. And they can't. And my series of questions, and Mr. Chair, I won't do a series of questions, but one is, when this whole thing was scoped out, why weren't there a list of base functionalities that deputy registrars use every single day? And you've heard from them today. Why weren't those included in the first rollout? That's the number one question I think I've got.
Who wants to field that question?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, That is part of the agile process, is that we prioritize the type of work and the most frequent type of transactions that we do. So while there were definitely challenges those first couple days, we feel that we have covered the major part of the transactions and that we are continuing to make those adjustments as we go along. So we recognize the first week or so was challenging, but we feel we're making improvements all the time to move this thing through.
Representative Nash, will follow.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, to the testifier, we've heard from dealers and other registrars who deal with large volumes of things that they can't get this done, and that's a problem. And that sort of goes in line with my second question is, in talking to a lot of the deputy registrars and dealers and other folks, you've heard that they are expending tremendous amounts of overtime. And I'm just wondering, what is to be done to help these folks out? I've heard from one registrar who's asked to stay private at this point, but they're losing thousands of dollars of top-line revenue every day. And because it is a private registrar, the owner is infusing personal capital to keep the doors open. Because the base functionality is there, the system doesn't work quickly, and in a meeting that we had at the department, when asked why things are taking so slow, and members, you'll want to remember this, we were told that the deputy registrar is typed slowly, and that was because that was why we had some of the slowdowns that we had. It was in your office, you were at the meeting, and we were told that they just type slow. And I'm sorry, but that's not a very good answer when you're running essentially a customer service organization. So I guess back to my question is, what are we going to tell the deputy registrars and the dealers and the people who are expending thousands of dollars every day in overtime? What are we planning on telling them?
Ms. Halls.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we are continuing to work with deputy offices to make improvements all the time. That is our focus. That is where we all want to be, and we heard the testimony today. We share the same concerns and the same vision for making this better, and that is where we are focusing our effort and time, is to continue to improve, to continue to make things better, to continue to make enhancements. And we are going through a transition. We recognize it's challenging, but we also know it's temporary. And we are certainly committed to working with any of the stakeholders, any of the individuals that talk to us or testified today, to make sure that things can improve.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've got a couple of questions here. The first one is that Representative Bernardi asked me to ask before, because she had to leave, and it goes in a little bit with Representative Nash asked about. For some of our offices that are in city offices or county offices, they're putting a lot of money out there. They haven't paid out the overtime, and there's some concern from them. Is anyone going to reimburse them for their extra costs that they have had to put up? Because right now that's falling back on the taxpayers. As the private individuals falling back into the individual's pocket. And I guess that if there's any thought of that been done.
I think I'd like the commissioner to step forward. Commissioner Dolman, this question has come up now a couple of times about, was there any thought given to the extra time that dealers and deputy registrars are required to put in to try and deal with this system that's not working, and what should their expectations be from the department or from us?
Mr. Chair and members, in regards to the expectation or the implementation of, I think we understood that in order to have a system that gives real-time information to the users of the system, that the business process was going to have to change, and that the deputy registrars were going to have to do more work up front in as far as data entry goes. And so we had hoped that the training that we provided initially would have helped them familiarize themselves with the system as best as possible. What we've learned is that we needed to ramp up some refresher training for the deputy registrar so that they can become even better familiarized with the system, and we are going to continue to work with them to make sure that they gain comfort with the system as we work through the process.
As far as reimbursement for overtime expenses, we have not had a discussion about this, that at this time.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess that was Representative Bernardi's question, and see what happens going forward on that. I also want to say that I had to renew my tabs on my vehicle, and the beginning of this problem, when the new system went in effect, and I went to my local deputy register about three times, and the line was out the door, and I finally went online and did it, and I got it in a week. So as far as doing it online, it worked okay for me. Hopefully I got the right number of tabs, and hopefully I don't get pulled over and end up with handcuffs on in jail because it reported as a stolen vehicle, hopefully that doesn't happen. But the question I have, and somebody said that now they're having you do multiple things, and what used to be one transaction is now coming up as multiple transactions, and we're seeing this huge, large number of extra transactions. So is that the new system? Is what old transactions that were one transaction now have to come out as being recorded as two or three or four different transactions?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would need to know exactly what transaction we're talking about in order to be able to answer your question thoroughly. Just because of the nature of MNMARS and how we do our work, it'd be best if I could speak to that deputy office to figure out which transactions are creating that situation.
Mr. Chair?
I'll give you one more.
I just want to say that if that's the case that's happening, the numbers that they're showing, that they're getting this huge increase in transactions, if transactions that used to take one, be listed as one transaction, are being listed as two or three transactions, that could skew the numbers way off and make the system look like it's really performing when it's not. Because, like I said, when I went there to do mine, the lines are out the door, and I can't imagine they're doing that many more transactions if they're taking that much longer each one to do because of the processes they're going through. So,
thank you, Senator Nelson. Would you care to respond further, Ms. Holtz?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, I misunderstood your question. Let me re-answer, and hopefully this is the answer you're looking for. The transactions that we count are being counted out of the MNMARS system, and so it's a different mechanism for counting transactions. Comparing that to the legacy system gives us some general sense of production, but we are counting out of two different systems now, and so the breakdown that comes through MNMARS is a little bit more refined, a little bit more specific than the numbers that we had reported before. So we did verify this information as well, because this question has been brought up to us as to, you know, how do we account for the variation in numbers. It's simply because MNMARS is counting things a little bit more differently than what we used to count. And so while our numbers are reflective, it's not necessarily intended to show that we're doing that many more transactions. It's more or less to show that the system is able to perform and do the type of transaction work it was intended to do.
Next up, we have Representative Housen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up to the deputy registrar and then my other question. Do most states have the system that we have where deputy registrar's offices are all over the state? That's how these functions are handled?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, each state varies in how they offer services at a local level. Some states have state employees that do that. Some break it down more to a county-city operation. So there are varying degrees of how offices or how states set this up in their own infrastructure and how they do that. Commissioner Dolman appoints deputies in the state of Minnesota to do work on our behalf. And that is not necessarily unique. It just kind of looks a little different than some other states do. It's a similar type process, but they might refine it or call it a little differently.
So, Mr. Chair, my question is the nature of the complaints. And
Ms. Representative Hausman and members, there's some kind of interference going on. If you're using your electronic devices, please stay away from the microphones. Representative Hausman, directly into the mic.
Mr. Chair, I had heard about people waiting hours and hours, and so I had to go in on July 28th and ran across the street to Sears, and just was shocked because there were so many people there. I thought, oh, my gosh, this is going to be awful. I was out in, I don't know, 10 minutes. I was moved to a particular line. I thought, well, maybe my speedy service had to do with the function I was there for, or that line, or the person who was helping. And so I asked a friend who was in another there for another purpose, and she was having an equal kind of quick exit. And so it was so different from what I was reading about in the newspaper. And so I wonder, are there, in this system, this kind of decentralized system, are there organizational differences? Are there staffing level differences? Can we even tell something about, is there a difference about where the complaints are coming from? I mean, would this help us understand, is there another level maybe here that we're not appreciating?
Mr. Chair?
Commissioner.
Representative Hosman. I think it's fair to say that across the state, every office has you know, different employees, different deputy registrars, different volumes of business that they have coming in each day, different hours. And so I think that we would probably likely then see more issues or complaints or concerns addressed from the deputy registrar's offices that see more volume. I mean, I think that just would stand to reason. But business practices across the state, maybe Director Olson can talk more about that, but might be a little bit different in each of the different offices.
If I can interject, Commissioner, isn't there quite a difference in the types of transactions that some offices deal with as to respect to their volume? So one particular office might do a lot more work with dealers, for instance, or someone in my neighborhood might do a lot more business with farmers, for instance, and that could affect the results they're getting?
Mr. Chair, yes, that's what I've learned. I've spent some time on the phone with Gay, and certainly their office is a heavy dealer office. They deal with the dealers more frequently, and so I think that it's fair to say that each office handles different processes or different transactions.
So if I happen to be in an office that has a particular type of transaction that you as a department have decided not to get in working order right away, then I would be affected much differently than an office that would just be doing a lot of tabs.
Mr. Chair, I would hope that we are addressing those concerns equally as they come in, whether it be a registrar's office that deals with farm vehicles or with dealers, as expeditiously as we can.
Are you finished, Representative Hausman?
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious. It sounds like all the testimony we've had and all the problems with the system is like we're creating a new system that has never been tested and never been used. But was there any time or research done for other states that have had similar updated systems that we could have learned from? And just if there was states, could you tell me how many?
I'm going to ask Mr. Meekin to respond to that since they're developing the software.
Mr. Chair, members, we did at one point in the project back a few years, we did do a number of state visits. We did a number of phone calls with other states. We had surveys that went out to those states. And we had a large number of lessons learned from those, which we put into action right away. Things around converting the data early to make sure the data was good. Things around how we do the overall design of the system and organize it from a business standpoint, and then also making sure that there's a large hands-on period before rollout, which is something that we really was striving to do with our adoption period on that. So, yes, we did. We engaged a number of states in advance.
Follow-up, Representative Danielson?
I'm not very hard to understand when other states, if we're mimicking other states or trying to use the knowledge that they have, to have such an utter failure rollout of this program. I'm a little lost at how it could be so bad and so many problems when we've done some research and hopefully, you know, caught some of these mistakes before they happen. So I'm just a little confused, I guess. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We'll take that as a comment. Next up, we have Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do appreciate Ms. Olson that you admitted the challenges and you're working on it, and you had mentioned better and timely communication, and that relates directly to an issue I had with a constituent who was very upset that he didn't get a call back and after several emails. So I have two quick questions, Mr. Chair. The first one is, what would be different if that constituent were to contact you now as opposed to July or August when he originally did? There was a problem with a title transfer, I believe, from his wife to his daughter. What would be different now?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we have experienced ongoing issues with printing titles, and we are working to get those printing issues resolved. Some of the testimony today you heard was about the same thing, but if a customer goes in and wants to transfer their title into someone else's name, as far as I know, that should be resolved. But I would certainly like to know more if I'm speaking, with limited information. I could say
we'll certainly pass that on to your office as we have done in the past. So then, overall, what is the strategy for when can the public feel that they will be getting responses in a more timely way? That was the issue, I think, that he was most upset with.
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, without a doubt, we were inundated beyond what we expected for phone calls and emails. And that's why we implemented strategies to be able to deal with the additional emails and calls. We extended our hours and we offered additional overtime. And so while that didn't take care of everything, it certainly has improved over time. And so as we continue to send out new functionality and new releases and make improvements, things are starting to fall into place because generally customers are looking for their stickers or a title, and we know that those things are starting to slowly get resolved, and so hopefully we'll be taking care of those and they don't need to be contacting us and waiting for information.
Okay, and then one very quick final question. I'm still interested in, I don't feel that you would completely responded to Representative Nelson's question, and so I just want to take one last crack at the framing of this. Do you have, or are you tracking, Representative Nelson talked about an initial problem and then it was resolved to his satisfaction in a timely way when he went online to get his tabs. Are you tracking, what percentage of transactions, even in this problematic period with all these glitches, have been successful and how many have not been overall with the system? Do you have a way of giving us specific numbers? Because, it has worked for many people and it's not worked for others. Do you track what percent have been successful, been successfully transacted in this amount of time that you've allocated for that transaction to occur?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, there's a lot of factors that go into what we would consider successful. And while I can't give you today specific percentages of transactions that we would consider were not successful versus overall, there are a lot of elements that go into what we would define as success. And our focus, as well as the deputies, is to be able to provide customer service, get that individual the credential and the information they're seeking as quickly as possible. And we haven't delved too deeply into the data around that, specifically because we're continuing to work through the transition process. But it's certainly something that we will take a closer look at and verify as we go forward.
Well,
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you, and I hope that might be helpful to the committee if we were to be able to get that type of data, and you know, in a way that's you know respectful of your other priorities, which I think is to take care of the public right now. But I would really like to know, perhaps even by the end of the year, some kind of a report about that.
Thank you, Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, I think I maybe probably know a little bit more about a lot of these issues because I've been working hard in the last several months with Commissioner Dolman and Commissioner Baden and the higher level of deputy registrar's frustration about rolling this thing out. I remember last session when we had some folks from DBS talking about the rollout of this coming up this year, and there was a arrogance in that room that I think I shared with Commissioner Dolman at that time too that I was concerned about. It's the controlling factor of the relationship of the deputy registrars and the DBS office. And I've been very open to the commissioner, who I know listens and I know wants to make a difference here. And the purpose for this reason, I think, for this meeting today was to highlight real boots on the ground with the deputies out there that are trying to do the very best. It's trying to talk about a real hard system to roll out. I get that. And I have seen this transaction number get thrown around. Stop looking at transactions. You're not comparing apples to apples anymore. Look at revenue. What we care about is revenue coming into the state of Minnesota. That is a real number. That's what ends up in the bank account. And for us, trying to find a way to fund roads and bridges, we need to know what's going in the bank and not how many transactions you're doing. But what we're not getting away from is the horrible lines at the deputies' offices and the online issues we're having. Everybody's frustrated, but I will tell Commissioner Dolman right now, your problem is you have a PR nightmare. And you need to find the right person to lead this. Because right now you don't have anybody doing that, in my opinion. What I see happening is a lot of defense, a lot of shielding, because it's a big system, I get it. You still have to have an ability to say, I'm sorry. You still have to have the ability to tell the deputy registrars, we didn't do a very good job rolling the system out. We could have done a better job telling you there is going to be more work on the front end. We need to be able to tell our residents that they shouldn't have to wait twice as long, but the new system is going to require us to do that. We should have been honest with them. And I just think right now, in your position, because you have to be, you're appointed by the governor. The governor should be taking note of this right now to say, I need to give the commissioner some help on this, because right now we are starting our eighth week of this rollout, and I think our systems are not getting fixed as fast as they should be. I will agree that it has certainly gotten better for the first 2 weeks, but anything after the first 2 weeks is going to get better. It was so bad. I give you credit for where you're at today. Thank you for that. But we have got to own this thing. And when you have a bad customer service issue, and I learned this in the restaurant industry every day, that if I get two complaints in a week or three on a bad steak, I have a problem. Because nobody likes to complain, but we have a whole bunch of Minnesota residents that have told us we have a problem. So I just hope that the department gets their PR act together and gets real honest with people and tells them, we made some mistakes. It's not the deputy registrar's fault. It's not, we just have to own it. The leaders have to own it, and I hope that we can do a better job going forward, because in 2 to 3 weeks, if we have another one of these hearings, we're going to have to show where we're at then, and it has to show we're making solid progress, and Minnesota residents are going to start showing up not as calm as they are today. So we have to do this, because they don't have anywhere else to go to get their tabs and the registrations to drive in a car. They don't have to come back to my restaurant if my steaks aren't better, but they have to come to the state. And we as citizen legislators have to ask you to put the right team in place to execute this plan. So with that, I just want to challenge you, Commissioner, to do that going forward, because that's the toughest job you have, is finding the right people in this moment of time. Thank you.
We'll move on. Next up, I have Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have several questions, but first I want to preface my experience, because it seems to be one of the more positive ones I've heard today. But on July 31st, I went to get my tabs, thinking this is not a good day to do it on the last day of the month, and I'm expecting a line. But it was a beautiful day, They have the door open. There are already five or six people standing out on the sidewalk. So I turned around, and somebody in line said, no, come, it's going quickly. And it did. You know, they were able to cross. I was there maybe 15 minutes max. So at least my deputy registrar at the beginning, whatever they, you know, maybe we were all doing easy things. I just went there for the tabs. But, it, you know, it went very smoothly. The people in line were happy, and it looked like the staff that was servicing us was happy. So said, July 31st in my community, it was a good day. But the one person in particular that I'm concerned about, my first question, is the man that is concerned about losing his driver's license being suspended. I mean, do we have an immediate thing to do for that man? I mean, he shouldn't have to be driving backwards. And I don't care what we have to do, but when he leaves this building, we need to do something for him. Other than, you know, and if you want to do a personal escort. So do we have an answer for that?
You need to ask those people, not me.
And I think, Mr. Chair, if I may comment to that, those emails that I've been getting on some of those issues, I'm actually emailing them directly to the Director Olson, and she's been very good about handling those individual cases when it gets to be to that level. So I'm trusting Ms. Olson will handle that one specifically really fast.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, I just need to make sure he doesn't leave so I can get the specifics on that information. But yes, we certainly, if we have those individual cases, we elevate those right away, and certainly do not want to create a case that he described.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very quickly, Representative Mason.
This is kind of a follow-up to Representative Hoskins' question. When I'm looking through these, I am seeing a lot of zip codes. Do we have information as to whether this is totally statewide or were it certain offices that this was happening?
Representative Rundeck has a question. You got an answer? Wait. We haven't got all day.
Sure. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I would need to take a closer look at that. I don't
know.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm looking now. We've got a 5 pages of comments from the deputy registrars on problems they're having. I mean, incredibly enlightening. We've also heard from the dealers. But several things stick out in terms of that we've made the system more complex. I mean, in you know, doing the new program, we're doing things now where we can't expedite a title anymore. We're asking for more information that we don't need. For example, what the odometer reads on vehicles 10 years and older. I mean, you know, are we rethinking whether some of these steps are really necessary? And I guess that leads me to the next question, which is, you know, when the next rollout occurs, maybe you can tell me when that is, but are we doing anything to simplify and get back to what was working in the past?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, one of the key pieces of MIMAR's functionality is that it does require more real-time information being put into the system. In the past, most of that information was passed on to us, and we entered that information, which ultimately generated to the turnaround time we had on titles, because we took in work from 174 offices, and we had to process that work. So there are some things that we have added specific data fields to. Many of those things came at another stakeholder's request. It might have been information that was brought forward from law enforcement that has asked for us to capture additional information. But primarily we go by what the statutory requirements are for data that we include. I know you talked particularly about the 10-year plate or 10-year vehicle and the odometer reading. I believe that was not required before, and is that correct? Okay. So there are fields in the system that are required for data. There are also fields that are not required for data, because they're just, you know, if you have that information, but there are certainly elements of the data that we do need to collect and are required to enter to be able to complete that transaction.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I was listening to the testimony of the various stakeholders that came up today, I can't help but
have flashbacks when I'm hearing the long waits, the busy signals, the non-responsiveness flashbacks to another government system, and that would be Minsher. So just something, again, that it's not pleasant to hear this feedback. Of all of the different feedback we did hear, much of it was very concerning. Three of them that stuck out to me, though, and that is late fees being charged. I think we heard that over and over again. Another issue was the issuing of tabs in a previous owner's name. That's very concerning. And then third, the dealers, the registrars, et cetera, having to absorb the damage to customer relationships because the people don't know the full story, and they're the ones that are going to be suffering the damage to brand, damage to relationships, damage to reputation. So my question is twofold. Why are late fees being charged? If this is the direct result of government inability to process and creating the delays, why are late fees even being charged to begin with? Should those be waived? And then second, with the overtime that I presume is occurring at the department and other things that have come up in the process of this rollout, do you expect to have a supplementary budget request to this committee come next legislative session to deal with unexpected expenses from this rollout?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe the late fee question is coming from the dealer work. That is a statute that dealers have 10 days to get work submitted. We heard this early from the Dealers Association, and we told them we don't have any way to undo it in MMRs because it's a requirement, but we certainly will work with dealer offices to be able to determine if it was a MMRs-related late fee, that we will certainly take those things into consideration. We'll work with those offices. As far as the overtime, the additional costs that has resulted because of MMRs, that is certainly something that we are putting into our budget, and we're working within the budget that was provided to us by this legislature to work through those situations as we continue to work for better days.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, one thing's for certain, I know where I'm going to dinner to get my steak tonight. And I know we're short on time. I just wanted, I've got about three comments that maybe that you could comment on all at once. And the legislative auditor's report here, one of the main recommendations was what is a set time frame so that you can better communicate. And the timeline that you had submitted here for the committee report today, the roadmap, is pretty vague, so I'm hoping that you can get more specific on that. And I appreciate that you're kind of building this as a once-in-a-generation upgrade, but with kind of the vagueness and the manner that we're proceeding with, it might be take a whole generation to complete, so I hope you can get more specific with that. Second is, in 2011, a surcharge of $1.75 per transaction. With the new MMRs counting transactions, which were typically one transaction, being now it sounds like maybe multiple steps and count as multiple transactions in the new MMRs, is that going to result in more transaction fees going forward to be an additional cost to the consumers? And then finally, in the report of the legislative auditor, it had a $20 expedited fee that was granted for expedited titles and the electric vehicle titles. Who retains that extra $20 fees for that extra convenience? And I think consumers in many cases are happy to pay it, but I'm curious to know who retains that. But it also seems a little convenient that you have this botch rollout that would almost entice more people to pay that $20 fee. So if you could comment on those three, I'd appreciate it.
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as far as more specific information on the roadmap, we are happy to provide that. We provided pretty specific information about what's coming up for this fall. That does give us the basis that is the most accurate information that we have. The information that's produced for months down the road or other seasons are not fully vetted yet, but they are on the radar for planning purposes. So we fully intend to give more real-time information as to what is coming and provide that information.
And Mr. Chair, if I could just interject on that, I appreciate the answer. very specifically, there's a huge concern that hasn't been brought up yet, and of course, we've been working hard the last couple legislative sessions as the Real ID rollout.
Mm-hmm.
You appeared in front of our committees. We need to make sure that that gets done.
We'll be addressing that at the end of the hearing. Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And because we're running short on time, I would just like to ask my questions and then perhaps respectfully ask that we get an answer at a later date. And I've heard a lot about the costs that our business owners and dealers and registrars have experienced, but I'm wondering what the cost to date for the overrun for these issues has been and what you think the cost would be to resolution, because to me that's effectively funds wasted because the project wasn't done right to begin with. I'd also like to know how these delays in resolving these issues is impacting the timeline for all the other rollouts, including what you referenced, not just Real ID, but the other things on the list. And I also would like to learn more at a future date about how those funds would be reallocated or potentially be reallocated to our registrars who took on some of the work from what was being previously processed by the state, or excuse me, the DBS office.
Thank you, Representative Barr. We will get your answers. Representative Salk.
I'll pass.
Thank you.
Too big a question.
I appreciate that. Representative Howe, you had a quick comment. He's done. We are near the end of our time, but the topic of the driver's license portion of MNLARS that is going to be rolled out in the future. We all know it's coming. We all know it's important. We all know it also needs to incorporate the Real ID, and I believe, and I think most of us believe, there's going to be a large demand to get those as quick. People are going to want them right away, I think. Many people will, not everyone, but lots of people will. It's going to put a lot of people in line at our offices applying for these Real ID licenses because people like to know that they can get on an airplane. We don't know at this point, I believe, exactly how the extensions are going to work from the federal government, but we do know it needs to be incorporated into this system. I want to figure out some way that you can assure us that when we get to the point that we are willing to turn on, stand up, for to use the proper terminology, the driver's license portion of MNLARS, what can we do differently so that it works on day one and we're not sitting 8 weeks out with a system that still has a number of pieces that don't work?
Mr. Chair, members?
Mr. Meekin.
There are some real distinct and important differences between our vehicle services, the release that we're planning for that, vehicle services and what we're going to be doing for driver services. Number one, the platform that we've put in here, the software, this core system that we've put in for vehicle services serves as the base for driver services. Lots of common functionality around the cart and scanning and online, all those things. So as those mature, that benefit is seen in the driver services piece of it. The next thing is, back when we started this project, we were very concerned about what was called Big Bang, which was to do all driver and all vehicle together. So initially we felt that when we separated driver from vehicle that was a pretty good way to kind of to lower our work in progress, our WIP, because the smaller the releases you do, then the less risk you take on with that. We did split that in two. We did vehicle in one release. That was pretty big, probably bigger than we would have liked. Now looking at driver, we have the ability to break that down into three or four releases. And that's something we spent a lot of time on, the architecture of how can we turn off the legacy system, the mainframe system, in pieces like that so that we can say just turn on the application part of driver or just turn on the issuing part of driver or compliance. And then the last thing is, and this is very significant, is that our end user population includes state employees. And we can pilot production with state employees for driver. And that is something that we really couldn't do with vehicle. So we feel that every one of those is a risk reducer. And then so many of the lessons that we've talked about here today, just applying those to the driver release would be very important.
It's my understanding that the new driver's licenses will be also include incorporating a new vendor. Is there a timeline that's been established with the new vendor, and does that affect when we have to move ahead with the driver's license portion of Minmars?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that is accurate. They know our timeline, and they're working in compliance with us and to meet that timeline as well.
And so what is that timeline?
Well, like Mr. Meekin had said, there's series of milestones that need to be met to keep us on task with meeting that timeline. There are changes that they need to do as well as pieces that we need to do to line things up. I'll just give you one quick example for one of those things. It's we have to install new cameras in each of the DL agent and exam stations. It's getting those kind of pieces to the process in alignment so they're lining up and those cameras are available once we're able to issue real ID cards as well as any other cards under this card vendor.
So is there a timeline restriction with the new vendor or is there not?
Not at this time.
Is there a drop dead date when we have to switch to the new vendor?
We already are switched to the new vendor. So, and they are very aware of what our timeline is to be able to meet the statutory requirement.
So the new vendor is issuing licenses under the old system?
Yes. Actually, it's the same vendor. So they're currently issuing licenses under the old, and they're planning for the new.
Okay, good. I didn't know that. Thanks for informing. I learned something today. What do you know? Members, I'm going to give the commissioner a chance to make a final remark before we close out, but a couple of housekeeping things. If you have not filled out an expense sheet today, please fill one out today so we get them turned in a timely fashion. There may be some timelines involved that we'll see. And I would also like to, for those of you that don't know, our CA has a new last name. She's taken some time off recently and went out and got married. So it's no longer Chelsea Teeter, it's Chelsea Axelson, and congratulations. So she will have a new email address, I believe, and she'll get that out to all of us. Commissioner, I'm going to give you the final word. I should probably take it myself, but I'm going to give it to you today because this is a big deal, and there's a lot of very frustrated, disappointed people, including, I think, most of the people around this table, and I would hope that you can give us some consolation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would just like to say in closing, for where we own mistakes that we made in the rollout of this process, as the Commissioner of Public Safety, I apologize to you and to the people of Minnesota and to our stakeholders and business partners. We'll do better. We are going to continue to work diligently to make sure that this system functions better in the future. We've made great progress, but we have more work to be done. I look forward to working with all of you and being responsive to your questions and responsive to where you are pushing us to be better as well. And I look forward to developing stronger relationships with our deputy registrar partners, our dealer partnerships, and the people of Minnesota. And I hope that we can do this together. Thank you.
Members, this meeting is adjourned.